Hi, everybody. Kel Weinhold from The Professor is In. I am the productivity coach and the interview and campus visit coach for The Professor is In.
And you're so much more than that.
Thank you.
You're the big picture thinker and impresario and idea generator. Many things.
And that person talking is?
I am Dr. Karen Kelski, the founder of The Professor is In. And overall gadfly and rabble-rouser on social media and on the blog, getting people worked up about all the various outrages of and inequities of the academy, especially with COVID and all of the things resulting from that and the election. Those of you who follow our social media know, at least the Facebook page, that I've pretty much turned Facebook over to get out the vote efforts this past week, all the way up, and it will, up until the election, which will be passed when you hear this. So that's what we're up to. And my team and I also edit your job documents, and I help you negotiate job offers. Oh, and my other team and I help you with leaving the academy, which is extremely important at this juncture. And that's actually what we're going to talk about today.
That is what we're going to talk about today, and we're going to follow up on a couple different podcasts that we've sort of wandered our way into this. We've been engaging with the collapse of the job market. We've been engaging with last episode was really about sort of needing to do a hard reset and really think about what you want to do and how you want to do it. And in the next probably five episodes, I think, but you know us, we could forget two episodes in, or the election could go so far south that we can't even think of what to say. So, but the plan today is to do about five episodes where we really break down step by step the things that you can and should be thinking about in terms of leaving the academy. So leaving the academy or leaving your toxic relationship with the academy. So Those of you who are listening going, well, I'm not leaving the academy. Yeah, well, let's talk about how you might separate yourself from the toxic relationship that you have created around the academy.
Sometimes you leave the academy, but leave the toxic relationship intact. And I actually just wrote about that in a blog post today where I did a review of Christopher Catterine's new book called Leaving the Academy, A Practical Guide. It's a very good book. I recommend it. And in the process of writing a overwhelmingly positive review, I did take issue with one point in the book about where he addresses what he calls the overqualified trap. And although he gave good advice, it wasn't what I would say about the overqualified trap. And I'm going to say, bring it up right now, that a lot of academics go into thinking about leaving the academy and like their first, second, or third question in the back of their minds is, oh, but what if I'm overqualified for the jobs I'm applying for? And to me, that question is such a red herring, and it shows so much how you are still operating in a relationship with academic exceptionalism and gaslighting and mythologizing. Even after you have ostensibly made the decision to leave, if you're saying, oh, my overqualification is my biggest problem, then you're still in this kind of toxic relationship with the academy.
Interesting.
I can explain why I say that if you want, or maybe that's a little bit getting ahead of our topic. But maybe I should, just because I don't want people being like, what the hell is she talking about?
Yeah,
so sure. That you're really not, even if you have a PhD for a job that is only asking for a BA, that doesn't make you overqualified. What it makes you is overdegreed.
Right.
And that does not mean say anything about your qualification. This is not to say you're not qualified, but that you just have to do the translation work. And incidentally, this Christopher Catterine does a great job of explaining that. Translating what, you know, academics, the stuff, what you can pull out of your academic background to show that you are qualified for this job, because you probably are. And because you're very qualified for many, many jobs outside the academy. I don't even know who you are who's listening right now, but I know you, yes, you are qualified for many jobs outside the academy. So the deal here is that when you walk in using language, and I'm so defensive about it, or I should say reactive to it, because every single time I give a talk on leaving the academy, it's pretty much the first question in the Q&A period. But what if I'm overqualified? And it's really like, you know what, that's kind of a gaslighting that your advisor has either directly or indirectly communicated to you, that somehow, you know, that cult-like thing, you're so special, you're so special, you're so special, we're so special, we're so special, we're so special. And that works against you in everything, but especially in trying to leave.
There's also the thing that's written in there in a strange way is, I mean, I think you're saying the same thing, but I react to it on a class level, right? Like, I'm going to become a manager at Target. Well, I'm overqualified because I have a PhD. You're actually not overqualified to be a manager at Target because you don't know how to be a manager at Target and you really don't know anything about retail. And even if you studied the retail, you know, supply chain as part of your economics degree. So that always sort of, you know, sets my teeth on edge because there's a certain sort of, you're a person who's qualified is hyper-educated, and a person who is unqualified doesn't have that education, but they have a whole shit ton of knowledge. So anyway, that sort of leads into how I wanted to suggest that we start this conversation with really looking at that. So sort of two things. One is like really to use a recovery term, really discovering if this is your rock bottom. Is this it? Are you willing to stop trying? And if you're not willing to stop trying, are you willing to change your relationship to the thing to at least not be sick in the process? You know, are you chasing the drug?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you just, you know, one of those casual users who isn't an addict?
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. So I thought that I feel like one of the biggest barriers that I see for academics is their just refusal to admit, and not everybody. So you guys, we're going to talk in broad terms, but I know it's not everyone. Is just the refusal to really look it square in the eye of what's really happening. Like,
yeah.
Like it in 2008 or 9 or whenever that was, it happened. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I'm a little aggravated today, I'll confess. So folks, get ready. Like what I'm about to say, because I know the last time I touched on adjuncting, we got the only truly negative review of our podcast that we've ever gotten, as far as I'm aware, which said I was disrespectful to adjuncts. But the Chronicle had a piece about 2 days ago about adjuncts in light of the pandemic in 2020. And the piece, honest to God, I mean, take out the pandemic, it could have been written in 2015, 2010, 2005, 2000, 1990. I mean, it's the same old story. And it's adjuncts can't make ends meet. They are precarious. They are going to have to, and then they quote one, and the person they quote says, I'm going to have to give up the job that I love. And then there's a picture, of course, just like every one of these stories, with this adjunct sort of standing in like a doorway, looking wistfully out into the middle horizon, into the middle distance. And I used to be 100% like on the outrage train about them, just like you were supposed to be like, oh no, this is terrible, this is terrible. And it is, at a macroeconomic level, it's terrible. The university system should not be defunded. We should not have adjuncts. We should have people who are properly compensated for their labor. That is my bottom line. It always has been. But at some point, it's like, come on, people. The Chronicle's been publishing articles. New York Times been publishing articles. The Atlantic has published articles starting from, I don't know, 1995. And people, the refusal to understand this in people who otherwise have advanced degrees in analytical thinking is, well, I mean, it's a drug. It's an addiction.
Well, hang on. I mean, you know that I agree with you. I might not agree with the delivery, but I agree with, at the core, a little bit sort of right where where you started, which is this idea that I don't or we don't respect adjuncts. It's actually, you know, my aggravation with adjuncting is at the core respect. It's
yeah.
that it's at the core, I believe people should be paid a living wage. Mm-hmm. I believe that you should be compensated for your labor and treated with the respect due you as a human being in a system.
Yeah.
And so what causes me pain and frustration certainly is that people continue to do something that so completely disrespects them.
Themselves.
Now, them. Right, themselves.
Or now, they allow themselves to be disrespected by an institution.
Right. And now, just to forestall all of the, you know, arrows, I understand that economically there are people who are just trying to cobble together a living. I totally get it. Mm-hmm. I totally get that right now where you are in your life, four different adjuncting courses, and right now actually, you know, it might even be a good thing because you don't have to drive from campus to campus to campus. You can adjunct at four campuses and never leave your house. So all of those things, I mean, I don't have any problem with that. I get aggravated about it or defensive about it or protective about it when I see people doing it thinking that it's their way in mm-hmm. to a tenure track job or thinking that somehow they can earn the respect of faculty by all the labor they put in. And I did it. I know I did it. I scrambled and taught more and took on more and did everything and all that stuff so I could get that job. And I didn't get that job.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, there was no one better at my job than me. There mm-hmm. wasn't. But I didn't get that job mm-hmm. because they're going to hire somebody outside, not inside. They're going to hire. I mean, there's a whole bunch of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So I just I don't want. I guess what I never want people to feel like we're punching down.
I know, and I don't want to. I don't. But I also feel like the hallmark of the professor's inn from day one, 10 years ago, was tell the truth, and my truth comes from what I see.
Right.
And what I see is has often, especially in the beginning when people weren't prepared to agree with me, it was offensive to many, many, many people. And I said it anyway. And history has proven me right. People have caught up. You know, I'm not the only one saying it anymore. But I feel that it is of value to say that 10 years for me, 20, 25 years for the higher ed at large, of people refusing to look at reality and believing that adjuncting is a viable career, I mean path to a career, in the face of all evidence that is publicly posted, is not secretly held data, you know, by Cambridge Analytica or anything. It's right out there. I feel the need to say this now. It's enough. This has to stop. And it does come from respect, actually. It comes from respect that you, if you're listening and you are feeling angry that I'm saying what I'm saying, it's I think you deserve better. You deserve better. And you're entitled to better. And you can get better.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you end up working at Starbucks, you know, not necessarily permanently, but I feel that you are extremely likely to be treated with more respect at a job of that nature than you are adjuncting in the university in 2020.
Yeah. So that was a very long segue into the idea of, for you, when, and only you can know this, only the individual can know their rock bottom. And you can rant and yell and lecture and, you know, finger wag. But in this case, I'm not talking about adjuncts. I'm talking about at people as they spiral, whatever they're spiraling with. You all know if you've had something that where you've just started in a cycle and you're spiraling down and you have friends saying, that I think that there's only one way to know when you hit rock bottom, and that's when you hit it really hard. And it could be, I mean, right in the middle of a Zoom class that you've spent so much time preparing for, and, you know, something goes like the total disrespect occurs, and not that it's any different than any other day.
But one but day.
That day, it's just like, this is enough. Enough already. Mm-hmm. I'm not. So.
Yeah, that's why they call it the straw that broke the camel's back.
Right.
You know what I think is an incredibly valuable analogy that many, many others have used besides me. So this is not new, but it's a bad relationship.
Oh, yeah.
And your friends sit there and they watch you and they love you. And they're like, you have to, do you not see? Do you not see? And I want to circle back to the disrespect thing. Kel and I are your friends sitting here looking at you, you being, you know, theoretical adjunct, caught in an abusive relationship with a bad partner. And it's like, do you not see? You know, please see what they're doing to you. And it's because we want better for you. We want you to get out. But you know, we all of us have been had our friends be, or we've been the ones. We've all occupied probably both or subject positions. But you know, when you have a friend who's in that bad relationship, all the wisdom and logic in the world makes no difference. That friend sees it when they see it, and not a minute sooner.
So let's move it. Okay, just to, because I don't want this to. I absolutely was not planning on this being about adjuncting. I was actually planning on this being about the larger academic job market writ large.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So just to, you know, you can look at our column dispatches from the front lines, and there was a column a couple weeks ago looking at how many positions were available where, and I didn't read that, but I saw a lot of stuff on Twitter. I have seen a lot of stuff on Twitter come up about like, well, we have 6 positions. Well, we have 10 positions. And I feel like it's one of those gaslighting, you know, well, this person, you know, Beyonce is a billionaire. Why can't everybody, you know, every black woman be a billionaire? And it's like, okay, you're gaslighting us all by not dealing with the systemic problems. So yes, some of you in particular fields, they're hiring. Let's bracket that, okay? And let's talk about what's happening at every university right now. And we know people at universities from the tiniest HBCU to the biggest, most robust ivory tower university. We know people who are involved in all of them. There's nobody who's not contracting. Nobody. Mm. Some are contracting to
extinction
level, mm-hmm. but everyone is contracting.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And far more cataclysmically than happened in 2008.
Yeah.
Because we were starting from an exponentially weaker starting point. And because this is, just much more intense. I mean, the pandemic, 2008, was a real estate related bubble, you know, collapse. The pandemic is directly impacting university functioning. It is a crisis for many, many sectors of the economy, like the airlines, you know, we don't fly. Mm-hmm. It is a crisis for universities, which absolutely depend on the dollars that come from
housing
and events, sporting mm-hmm. events. So mm-hmm. with that gone, there's no talking your way around this, like, oh, we'll be okay. There's no okay.
Yep.
There's just who's going to, you know, how much does everybody have to cut to survive, or and who won't survive?
And I totally understand. I can understand at a visceral level why someone who's either in their PhD or finished their PhD or has been on the job market for a couple of years and had some early success in their got interviews, you know, feels like they're right on the cusp of that thing starting, or the people who are looking and already can see, uh-oh. The one thing I know that I can probably guess is that all of you are feeling like you wasted your time. So many of you feel like, but I just spent X number of years, but mm-hmm. I just did this thing. And I think that's still trying to squirrel out of just hitting
mm-hmm.
like, but I also think, yeah. And
we had, I mentioned this to you before we started recording, that someone on Twitter asked if we do an episode on regrets. This person has transitioned out of the academy. I don't know exactly what they're doing right now, but they said that they seem to be doing pretty well. But what they said was they just keep looking back. They can't stop looking back, saying, if only, what if I, why didn't I, revisiting these choices. Mm-hmm. And I get that. I regret.
I get it.
In my life. And some of them even related to my academic career.
Oh, yeah. I do the academic loop mm-hmm, back loop every back. Fall.
Yep.
Every fall. The leaves turn.
Right.
And the academic loop back starts for me. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
I miss, and then I remember grading. Yeah. But
let's just say, regret is a real thing.
Yeah.
Is regret an emotion? That is an emotion, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is, regret does not equal a waste.
Right.
Right? So if you can move away from this idea that because it didn't turn out the way you planned, first of all, just pause for just a brief minute with the delusion of that alone. Mm-hmm. I had a plan. And okay, you plan, God laughs, right? Isn't that the line? But I had a plan does not mean, and I think that this is the one of the little insidious things about the university, and I can't really think about other careers where this happens. Like, first of all, I think it's weird that you put in all this stuff and there's no job at the end. That's just freaking weird. It's weird. Like, you can train for all sorts of things and there are jobs. You can go get a job.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no job at the end in your mm-hmm. thing that you train for. Mm-hmm. So that's, there's a, you guys need to explore the fact that you've been trained for a job that didn't exist. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now, train for a job that didn't exist.
And somehow you're very, very intelligent people, but somehow some individuals, groups, and programs manage to gaslight you into not recognizing what is clear. Like they somehow.
Well, there's this whole, universities, I remember them when I was there, and still, even when I talk to people, there's this like belief that you live outside the bubble of capitalism. Mm-hmm. Like you're doing all this thing and this magic will occur
magic.
In this ivory tower.
Right. It's because a black we're box separate, of magic. Like,
we're separate from that. Uh-huh. So if you can, just because you plan something and it doesn't work out, doesn't mean the effort you put into it was a mistake.
Right.
It's only a mistake if you did something you didn't want to do. And it's not a mistake. So what if you just say, how about this? How about you just wake up every day and say, you know what? There's a lot of value and wisdom in what has come before this moment. I gained so much wisdom, and not about, 17th century German literature, which you did, but I'm talking about the larger wisdom, like mm-hmm. how to operate in a crowd, how to navigate politics, mm-hmm. all the sort of value and wisdom that came before, so that you can shift your thinking mm-hmm. to think, this has all led to here. Mm-hmm. Now what's here going to be? When mm-hmm. am I, now is here's my chance to have agency, my mm-hmm. chance to say, all right, what is this? Where is this path going to go?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, I feel like it's one of those comedy routines. You've seen it in every movie where that one stupid person keeps running up against the brick wall and hitting it and falling down. I feel like it's Jim Carrey, but it's like every movie is Jim Carrey hitting a wall. Mm-hmm. But you know that comic scene?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I feel like. It's like, I'm on this path. I'm going to hit this wall waiting to have a job. Mm-hmm. Run back and hit it again mm-hmm. instead of like, actually, if you move just to the right there, mm-hmm. there's a door.
I don't know
where it goes.
Right. But there's a door. Right. Yeah, I hear that.
So.
Interesting. Yeah.
So it's just that shift in thinking, I guess.
I mean, we've talked so much that we won't repeat it in this episode. So much about the emotions of loss and grief, sorrow, rage, fury that accompanied this, because you were sold a bill of goods. To a degree,
uh-huh.
to a degree, you accepted, you bought a bill of goods. That's a little bit more the shifting some of the focus to that today in ways that we don't usually in most of our episodes. But you were sold a bill of goods, and there is a lot of righteous anger that is appropriate, is appropriate emotional response, and we encourage you to feel it 100%. But we're not going to spend every single episode talking about that righteous anger. There are other things to do while you're feeling it, which is also take proactive steps to re-envision your future. And, you know, that's what we're thinking of. That's what we're thinking about in these episodes.
Right.
So, did you want to share something more like concrete?
So yeah, here's the steps. This is how I want you to start. If you think about this as a little class we're going to do every week for the next 5 weeks, here's the work I want you to do until we meet again. I want you to notice when you look backward at what might have been. I want you to look at it and grieve it instead of not attending to the sorrow. So I feel like sometimes we look back and we think, oh man, I wanted that job.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of grieving that, instead of looking at it and grieving it and forgiving ourselves and the system and whatever we need to go ahead and move along, we just go back there and grab at it. Like, you know, Joan Didion in A Year of Magical Thinking talks a lot about that when you deal with a loved one's death, how you loop back to the moment right before their death over and over mm-hmm. and over, almost like your brain thinks if you could just craft it differently, mm-hmm. that wouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the homework, right? The homework is to, first of all, begin to notice when you're doing that, mm-hmm. begin to notice when you're going back. Like, if I had only, what if I had, I should have quit, I should have done this, mm-hmm. I should have done that. And forgive yourself, or whatever the word is, just like contend with that.
Mm-hmm. Because you are abandoning once and for all, or you will through this process, hope for a different outcome.
Right. Which is what?
Radical acceptance.
Yeah,
right?
I think it's actually Oprah says that, maybe it was in some show years ago with Yvonne Van Zandt, but it was forgiveness is giving up the hope of a different outcome.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when the people get caught, and I'm watching several people go through this year, Twitter, social media is a place where you see that now. You know, you can see that. I have a couple social media acquaintances who are fighting a mighty, mighty bitter battle with academia right now. They're so filled with grief, so filled with rage, so filled with loss and some self-loathing and regret. And they just cycle through it every single day on social media about, you know, and just why didn't I, why won't they, why can't they, I should be able to. And it's painful. It's really painful to watch, but it is part of the process.
It is.
And at some point it's like, yeah, and it didn't. It didn't, mm-hmm. they didn't, I didn't, we didn't, there wasn't.
And just let me tell you folks, in working with people about leaving the academy and all of that, grief, anything you've lost, right? Anybody who's lost a loved one, anybody who's lost something that was dear to them, you understand that cycle of why didn't I, it's why I brought up Joan Didion, is that this is a round in a loop. It's okay that it's a round in a loop. I'm asking you, when you do that loop, rather than grab onto it and suck on the bitterness of it, start to feel the grief of it so you can process it and let it go. And it doesn't mean that I don't think there's not room for anger. And a lot of what I feel like is that anger gets turned on. They turn it on people on themselves. Mm-hmm. Why the fuck did I ever do this? Mm-hmm. Why didn't I right. mean, I worry that people that hear you go, God, Karen was saying this 5 years ago and I didn't listen. Now I feel like a total asshole. Mm-hmm. I don't want anybody to feel that way. Mm-hmm. I want everybody to understand what I said at the beginning. Your rock bottom is your rock bottom.
Right.
Everybody has a different tolerance. Everybody right. has a different moment that they look up and say, yeah. I don't want to do this.
Why did I stay married for 14 years right. when, like, before I even got married, all the signs were fucking right there.
Right. Because you did. And you could spend your whole life going back and saying, why did I do that
right.
in a self-berating way?
Right.
Or you can go back and do that in a compassionate way right. that said, why did I do this? And I'm trying to I'm trying to get people to do that because I think out of that, the why did I do this? There's going to be some stuff where you're going to like go, oh, that was not a really good behavior. But there's going to be stuff that you say, oh, because I love this. And that's what I want, that sort of the beginning homework for next time. Is
that's where we're moving.
We're moving to.
That you did fall in love with.
Right. A thing.
Something. Some aspects about that career, about that grad school experience, about that opportunity. And I, you know, I get it. I am one of those people who adored grad school.
Right.
And never felt so alive and so perfectly myself as when I finally got myself into the right kind of grad program. So I get it. And it's like picking, remember, you know, separating those things from an institutional framework. We have talked about this before. But
no, we have.
Well, but you know,
we talk about a lot this over and over again.
Yeah.
Somebody, one of the people I work with at Unstuck
said
the other day.
Said what, we're repetitive.
No. Somebody I work at Unstuck. I work, no, it's not Unstuck. It's this grant that I'm a productivity coach for. One of the people on the grant was having a really hard week. And she said she was at home saying, wait, what would Kel say? She basically always says the same thing, just different ways. And I was like, oh, God. I think I feel okay about that. But it did kick me into a little bit of like, nothing I do is worthwhile. But it didn't last very long. So here's what I want to leave with.
Yes.
And then you can, you know, I want you to think, I want you all to think about caterpillars. Right? Caterpillars, what I didn't know about caterpillars until, I don't know, 10 years ago or so, is that I guess I always, as a kid, thought about caterpillars as sort of transforming into butterflies.
They sprout wings and they fly away.
Right.
Yeah.
Caterpillars dissolve into goop.
Yeah, this is a Martha Beck analogy.
Right. That's what I first saw. Like, they just dissolve into, they're unrecognizable. They're no longer a little bug. They're just goop.
Right.
And that you basically, if you're going to if you're going to move to something else, you don't get out of it alive. Yeah, I mean that identity, that self,
right, with all your contours intact,
right,
the way they were before,
right,
they're gonna collapse. It's gonna be, and that's another way of saying rock bottom,
right?
And why it's so good is because that's when the cells can begin the process of reconfiguring,
right? And the gift, to my mind, is the stuff in the mess. The gift is the little stuff in there saying, this is what I'm going to put back together. But to do that, you have to go through the grief. You have to sort of, and I don't mean decompensate to the point that, you know, you're not functioning, but that part of you that you start to let that identity disintegrate. Let that identity disintegrate, knowing that there's a whole bunch in there that's so marvelous and valuable when you separate it from its current form. That's what I have to say.
Yep. Well, I agree with that. And you know, whenever you have a breakup, what you're constantly thinking about is all the wonderful stuff you're going to lose. And it takes a long time to realize, oh, but then there was all that bullshit. Oh, I don't have to deal with that anymore.
Right.
Oh my God, I'm finally free of all that crap and that shitty thing they always used to do to me. And it's like you can't see that right away most of the time, especially if you didn't like choose the breakup.
Well,
if you didn't choose the breakup. If you chose the breakup, that's different, but that's not analogous to this thing we're talking about so much of, well,
Even people who choose breakups, there's a whole bunch
of
like,
of course.
I think a lot of people choose a breakup and then go, but
in any case, you're very aware of all the good things that you lost. I think vis-a-vis the highly mythologized academy, you're just like, oh, the campus and the falling leaves and the strolling and the bright young students and the
grading.
Graduation.
Oh, I love graduation.
I know. I love graduation too. Great. And wearing my puffy robe and my puffy hat. And, you know, so I guess I would say that, like with a breakup like that, it's like, oh, remember the shitty stuff. That's going to help.
Well, and also remember, I'm making the opposite argument. Remember, try to separate what it was about that that isn't like trying to piece out what's there. I mean, what was it about the fall? What is it about the, because I will tell you that the
fall will still happen even if you're.
But I mean, I think that the beginning of fall semester, the one of the reasons I loved it, it was this just opportunity to reinvent everything all over again. And then you're like at week four and go, no, this is the same shit it always was. But there's there are positives in there. Mm-hmm. So in my course, The Art of Leaving, that due to COVID is delayed in its launch, in the first week, I have people write a grief and loss letter, a letter of what they're losing.
Mm-hmm.
And just to write down the, just to write a letter to that. And so if you want to do that, that
we should
would
probably talk about that a little bit more next time.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. We've gone on long enough. I think, I think if we had any order, was there order in that?
Yeah. Because
that podcast,
I suppose in any case, when we record next time, the election will be over. So,
and whatever
know.
The outcome is, we're going to, you're going to hear this on the other side, and we're still here fighting for you.
Yep. All right.
Bye.
Bye.